awkward stretching in the afternoon. Chris Park has new artwork on display. The river is high and the valley is low. Market Square's putting on a vaudeville show. Looks like it's gonna be a beautiful night till day. Looks like it's gonna be a beautiful night till day.
Hey guys, today we are going to talk to Josh Purvis and Rob Howard and myself, and we're going to explain how we got started in the business. And Josh has some great stories about the Appalachian Trail. I know that everybody's excited as we are, so just sit back, listen to what we have to say, and it's going to be a great podcast. You're not going to want to miss it.
So I guess I'll start. So,
yeah, go ahead and tell us your story a little bit.
So I just wanted to give some background on who I am as Josh Purvis, because a lot of you here in Knoxville might not know me. And just to go over some things, so I didn't really know what I wanted to do whenever I grew up. I knew that I wanted to be super successful, didn't know what that meant, didn't know where I was going to start. So after I graduated from high school, I took a year off just to kind of figure things out. And I spent 4.5 of those months on the Appalachian Trail. I fell in love with hiking going through high school and just thought that, you know, taking a journey and spending some time alone from everything would give me a kind of new perspective on life. So on July 4th, Independence Day, I drove up to Maine and started at Mount Katahdin to hike the rest of the way down through 14 states to Georgia at Springer Mountain, ending November 24th.
That's insane.
That's awesome.
And it was quite an experience.
It really is. How long did that take you?
It was about 4.5 months, beginning to end, and it was a great time.
That's crazy. So what did you eat? I mean, like, do we, like, bark off trees and stuff?
Not as much bark, even though it's high in fiber, but yeah, what I did is really every 3 to 5 days I would hike in to resupply on food. And the food that you would carry out is a lot of really rice, potatoes, anything that can be cooked instantly in like boiling water is really what you want to find to pack out, because you have it, it's lightweight, doesn't take long to cook, and again, all you need is boiling water to, you know, cook it, because it's not like I'm carrying around a frying pan and a stove. Yeah. So,
did you ever get crazy and kill an animal and fry it right there?
No, I didn't. A lot of the trail is through state and national parks as well, so doing things like that is frowned upon. But it was also, you know, whenever you're talking about hiking an average of 20 miles a day, going and hunting for your own food is not the best, because you're ready to just put something in your belly and go to sleep.
Right, right. Tell us a little bit about your shoes. I mean,
those shoes. My feet were sore. So shoes-wise, I would wear just some trail runners, really. So it's like a stockier version of a tennis shoe is the way to think of it. Well, the first pair that I had, I wore for 900 miles of the trail. By the end of the life of those shoes, I mean, you could almost see through the sole. It was like I was walking barefoot on the ground, over rocks, over, you know, just anything, roots. So my feet got really, really beat up. And then ended up buying another pair of shoes, and no other shoes lasted me as long as this pair of Merrells did. I mean, they were fantastic.
So they just had like a convenience store in the middle of the woods. You just went and bought some of the shoes.
Hitchhiking. So nice. Whenever you needed anything, you just found a way to hitchhike. You found some town, you found somewhere that you could go. And for the most part, I mean, because you have to travel on the trail and people know that you got to eat, I mean, whenever you come to a road crossing, you stick out a thumb. Pretty much everybody in a pickup truck knows what you're doing. So they stop easily, they pick you up, they take you into town, and then you just get whatever you need, and then you hitchhike back out to the trail.
God, I bet you naturally look kind of shady if people didn't know you are.
Oh, if people didn't know, this grungy, smelly little 19-year-old boy would have terrified anybody.
Did you ever, like, think that your life was in jeopardy at any point in the trail?
You know, there were a few times. One time I was hiking through, this was a section in New York. And New York has a lot of ridge lines that are pretty rocky and don't have trees at the top of the rocks. Like, you can literally look down and almost touch the trees beside you, but you're walking up above them for a portion of the trail. So as I was walking through a very rocky and barren section, just so happened to be a thunderstorm. And just like I was close enough to pretty much touch the top of the trees, well, the lightning was also close enough to almost touch me. So while I'm walking and lightning bolts are just hitting everywhere around, it's, you know, yeah, you feel like, well, this might be the end. And needless to say, not only the lightning, but you also have rain on a rocky surface that is the only thing that you're walking on, so it starts to get a little bit slippery. Well, come to a section to where it's like, oh, the only way down is to climb on this rickety ladder that we put there in the side of the rocks. Well, slipped and didn't fall too far. I was almost at the bottom, but still, you know, landed with a thud. So that was one time. And the other time was one that is a little bit just like creepier and involved a person that was also hiking on the trail. And there is, you know, sections of the trail can be, you know, there's not a lot of people around. You don't really see anybody. It's not well trafficked or anything. So whenever I got into the shelter that night on this section of the trail, I get there and I notice that there's a guy just sleeping a sleeping bag. Don't think anything of it. I mean, that's pretty common. You walk up and there's just somebody already there asleep or taking a nap. Hmm. Well, I sit down, start making my dinner, and I hear him wake up. I hear a little bit of a rustle. And says, "Hey, how are you?" I'm doing fine. Still can't see the guy. It's dark over in his corner of the shelter and everything. Got my headlamp on. And don't want to look over there because I don't know what I'm about to see. And all of a sudden he says, "Oh, got to take a whiz." Gets up to walk out of the shelter to go and do his business. And lo and behold, he's just not wearing any clothes. And it's only me and him out there in the middle of the woods. And he's just not wearing any clothes. So needless to say, I'm a little freaked out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, it's, you're dealing with mountain people, you're dealing with people who are very earthy. So it's like, I mean, I've seen similar stuff to that before while I was hiking, just like nothing exactly like this with an older country gentleman just walking around naked in the woods. And the breaking point for me is whenever he comes back and starts looking at cooking his dinner. Well, the weird thing is he pulls out an iron skillet from his backpack. And like I mentioned earlier, you don't carry skillets with you on the trail because it's too heavy and you can't spend time to cook like that. So now I realize, okay, this guy is not a backpacker. Like, he is not a hiker. And the next thing, he pulls out a steak from his backpack and puts it on a little like pocket rocket grill, which are just these little gas canister grills that you screw the head on to get the burner started.
All right.
Well, he puts the skillet on there and slaps the steak on and starts frying his steak. Well, then after he's frying it, he sits down around the pocket rocket grill and just completely bare naked sits around the pocket rocket grill while his steak is sitting there on the fryer. So now he's looking at me with his legs spread, cooking the steak in between it, and tries to start a conversation. Well, needless to say, my sleeping bag went back in my backpack and I put my headlamp on and continued to hike another 10 miles to the next shelter. Because oh, there was no way I was sleeping next to whatever the heck was going on here.
He wanted to share a steak with you.
Right.
That's awesome.
But yeah, it was a great experience through and through. And the biggest thing that I learned while I was on the Appalachian Trail was I thought starting out that I could do everything on my own. I was a very independent, you know, 19-year-old kid, thought that I could do whatever, whenever, thought that I owned the world kind of mentality, like most 19-year-old kids whenever they graduate high school. Yeah. Well, what the trail did was open my eyes to that I really need people in my life and people to lean on and have support with. Because 3 months of the Appalachian Trail, I hiked completely alone. Like, you would see people here and there, kind of shake their hand, get their name, forget their name after you walk 2 miles. And it was just in and out, very, very lonely. And after those 3 months on the trail, I ended up meeting a group of 9 people that just really hit it off with, all a group of through hikers going southbound like I, and realized whenever I started walking with them that, you know, I really needed that camaraderie and that friendship, and it really helped me through the rest of the way. Because after 3 months of being alone, I mean, I started getting at a pretty rough point. You know, it can mentally drain you. So seeing myself as that, you know, I really needed that support of people was the biggest thing that I learned on the trail, is to, you know, lean on others, have good friendships, and then you'll be able to make it through.
So what happened after, you know, the trail? I mean, life after the trail, I mean, what did you come home knowing versus, you know, now you're ready for, you know, the professional world? I mean, what did you accomplish?
So came back from the trail and really still didn't know what I wanted to do. So naturally, first thing is you start working in an outdoor shop, because I just hiked the Appalachian Trail, so best place for me is to go to an outdoor shop to talk to people about hiking and selling them hiking shoes.
And what year was this?
This was in 2013.
Okay.
Yep. And started working there in about 2014. So took a little bit of time off after I finished, just to, you know, get my feet back under me in the real world. And just worked at the outdoor shop for about 9 months, and then got a little bit of a pay raise to go and start working at the airport. And worked at the airport for about 9 months of working on the tarmac, flinging luggage for $10 an hour out in the hot sun. And I'll tell you what, for the next time that anybody flies on a plane, look out your window while you're sitting there on the tarmac and look at those ramp workers, and know more than likely nothing that you have done as a job is as hard as what they're doing down there on the tarmac. They are waking up at 3 a.m. in the morning to put all of your luggage on a plane, and look around the plane now and think, okay, I'm here, but also there's another 100 plus people here who also have 1 to 2 bags that all weigh on average like 30 to 40 pounds that these people are trying to squeeze into. It's probably, I would say, like a 5x5 room that's probably 10 feet tall. And I kid you not, whenever I'm saying I will put 120 bags into that space that is like playing a lifestyle game of Tetris. Like, it is ridiculous the amount of bags that we're expected to put back there. And, you know, after my time at the airport, I realized, you know, hey, I'm not going to be a ramp hand for the rest of my life. And luckily enough, just through family, friends, actually it was my mom met one of my sister's old dance teachers at Kroger, and they just started talking. Dance teacher asked how I was doing, and she told her that I was, you know, working at the airport, not really loving it, needing a change. And the dance teacher's boyfriend at the time, or no, fiance at the time, just happened to be in the mortgage business. And she said, you know, Kristen, Josh should sit down and talk with Nick, you know, just see, you know, maybe he can give some insight on to what to do, you know, as far as career path goes. And me and Nick set a 30-minute coffee meeting just at Panera. And 2 hours later, Nick and I became really good friends and hit it off. And he then offered me a job at Foundation Mortgage whenever he started it back in 2015. And since then, now a little over 3 years later, I've been able to work my way up from $10 an hour of making cold calls up to vice president of sales at Foundation Mortgage.
And so now you make like what, $10.50?
Yeah, a little bit of a pay raise.
So Megan was actually the magical connector, the dance teacher introduces. You know, it's amazing in our world how networking works.
Exactly. You know? Yeah, it's just... It's really an eye-opener, too, like you said, Rob. I mean, how networking works, how people can connect people, and really it all comes back to, you know, who you know.
Yeah, and who you, I guess, interact with and become or turn into caring about, and, you know, the people who take interest in your life and vice versa.
Right. Well, and speaking of the people that you know, I mean, Rob, you know, like, literally everyone, it seems like. So give us a good story of kind of like a connector that you've met through the years, or somebody here in Knoxville that's really been a good connector for you that might have changed your career in some way.
Well, there's so many of them. I mean, even from here's a little funny story, I guess. I don't know if anybody knows who Henry Mancini is, but he was like a famous composer who did, like, in the 60s and 70s, he was the guy who did the movie soundtracks and things like that. Well, when I was on campus at UT, one of my professors, it was a music appreciation class. You know, one of those, not exactly in the top of my not on the top of my major, public relations, but, you know, it was just like an elective, and the professor there was Kirk Trevor, who was the conductor of the symphony at the time, and I guess just after the class, you know, just whatever, he's somebody you want to walk up to and chat with and all that kind of stuff, and I told him, I'd seen that there was announcing that there was Henry Mancini was going to be directing the Knoxville Symphony, or the Pops Orchestra, I think. And I was like, oh my gosh, I love Henry Mancini. You know, just I was an old man when I was born, I think, because, you know, whatever the stuff from like generations before I was really into. And Kirk Trevor was he just invited me to come hang out during their dress rehearsal and meet this guy who was, you know, part of American pop culture. You know, it's kind of like, hey, would you like to meet Bono, you know, 30 years before?
Right.
Kind of guy. And that's the kind of connections that people that I've just, you know, have some kind of strange connection with, you know. I don't think, there may have been one other person from the whole, you know, class of 30 people who he said, hey, come on and hang out and see, you know, this is something that I know you would appreciate and probably nobody else in the class would,
right,
you know,
right,
kind of thing.
So Rob, how did you come up with Knoxville Rob?
Oh, 2007, I was kind of in a funky spot, as far as life, and was just kind of hanging out and
drinking beer
a little bit. And one of my buddies, Saul Young, decided that he was going to, or I learned that he was getting into Twitter, which is like he was chatting with people, and there were only what? Well, in the whole world, when I signed up for Twitter, it was 7 million people were on Twitter. Now there's like 450 million or something like that. So he was, what I noticed was he was chatting with his journalist friends, and he was doing, you know, stuff that was very Knoxville centric, you know, very hyper local and interesting. Not just, he was a photographer for the New Sentinel. And so, you know, he was gravitating toward those folks. And I guess whenever, when you get on Twitter, you have to pick a name. And I was like, well, I love being in, I love Knoxville. I'm going to be in, plan to be in Knoxville till they move me out feet first, you know? And so I just sat down and I was like, well, gosh, what kind of name do you come up with? And I just did Knoxville Rob. It wasn't like I developed it from somewhere, but I did probably 6 months after I started it. I changed it to Realtor Rob because I was like, I think I might, you know, I'd been a realtor for several years, but then I was just like, yeah, I don't know. I'm going to change it to Realtor Rob. And one of the ladies that works at the Sentinel was like, no, you're Knoxville Rob. Everybody knows you as Knoxville Rob. And that was 2007, 2008.
And so, like, whenever you were called Knoxville Rob on Twitter, how many people to date, I mean, how many people randomly call you Knoxville Rob? They don't even know your last name.
A whole lot.
I've been out with Rob a few times, and people come up to us and they're like, "It's Knoxville Rob. It's Knoxville Rob." So, I mean, I've
all
been
from
there
a Twitter
personally, knowing that, you know, people don't even know his last name, but they know Knoxville Rob. So,
yeah, that happens about maybe a couple times a week. You know, not that often, but maybe a few times a month. You just, wherever you go, whatever you sit down. I've had interactions at places, just random places, like I was at Walgreens, and this lady was like, "You're Rob, Knoxville Rob, aren't you?" Like, yeah. And within, like, you know, a minute and a half, we were chatting and laughing and hugging and everything else, you know, you know, before going back to the cough syrup aisle.
Right. And one of the cool things that I've paid attention to is pretty much anybody that's in Knoxville, they can go on their friends list and they have a mutual friend in common with Rob. Pretty crazy as to how many people Rob's connected to.
I'm very judgy now on who I add on Facebook.
You're getting close to the 5,000, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah, we have to have at least 700 people in common before I add you.
At least 700 people. I will accept a friend on Facebook if I have 30 friends in common.
I don't think Rob and I have 700 people in common. It's like I'm getting the boot.
Brandon's grandfathered in.
Gotta choose wisely now. So
no.
Well, that's awesome. So Knoxville Rob, all from a Twitter handle.
Yeah, it turned in, and then after they told me, yeah, you should keep it, then there was a guy, Jay Papazan, who works for Keller Williams. He was like, if you're gonna have a brand, whatever you have, be consistent across the social media, across. So I bought KnoxvilleRob.com, and I bought, or I didn't buy, but I added, you know, that hash or that name on basically
Instagram,
every place that I could get it. Yeah,
nice,
so
nice.
Somebody's not surprised when if they type in Knoxville Rob, then they'll
it's
pretty much find me.
Rob.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, in truth, I looked it up one time. There, at that point, there were 11 Rob Howards, Robert, Robbie, whatever, in Knoxville. So, you know.
Got to set yourself apart.
Yeah, a little bit.
I know. I'm finding out now that there's another Josh Purvis here in Knoxville. So I gotta find a way to change my name. You know?
Just go by Maverick.
That's right. I'm Maverick from now on. So.
Well, I mean, and it's funny is that. I don't know, I guess maybe your signature or something. I'm just now thinking like JP.
You know, yeah.
That's what people call
just
you.
JP. So there we go. We're going to change it up. Can't have another Josh Purvis here. So. All right. Well, Brandon, what's some of your background? You know, how'd you get started here in Knoxville as far as being a real estate agent, and you know, got two great guys over here of the Hutch and Howard team. So,
well, back in 1987, I was born.
Man,
But born and raised here in Knoxville. Mostly grew up in South Knoxville, pretty much my whole life. So, as a kid, we, you know, were outside a lot, playing in the woods and all that stuff. Never really. You know, I don't think anyone here had an iPad or anything like that. So, but for the most part, you know, growing up had its challenges. We learned a lot to do without some things, and you know, we didn't know the difference. You know, we knew that we had pretty much everything we wanted, but our families were probably struggling just to make that happen. So it was pretty enlightening, as you know, as you get into your adult years, that you can look back and say, you know, my parents went without just so I could have the lifestyle that they didn't have. And so it's true now more than ever, because now I have a kid. So, and now I'm thinking, well, I want my kid to be better than I was, you know. So it's just, it's crazy how the history is repeating. But growing up, I learned how to play the drums. I started at 9 years old, and that kind of kept me away from getting into trouble. I never really wanted to go party or anything like that. I wanted to go play drums, and we called it jam sessions with a bunch of my friends.
That's awesome. Playing in the garage.
Well, we played garages, played in the basements, we played in, you know, and then we had like events and stuff like that. I wouldn't call it like shows or something, but we would go to like house parties and stuff and play and
invite the neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah. And it was pretty fun. We learned how to manage almost a little small business. I mean, it was a horrible investment, but I mean, it's the only place that you know, spend like $5,000 or $6,000 on all your equipment and get paid like $50 for the whole band. You know, you're splitting that with, you know, you got gas and all that. So, but it was a lot of fun. It kept us out of trouble, and we learned how to, you know, to really do the things that we're kind of doing now in life. So it's kind of neat. And I'm still friends with all of them today. So we're pretty close in that regard. And then after high school...
Do you guys still ever have jam sessions?
Well, after high school, we stopped playing. We have not really played shows or anything like that. I think we may have played a handful of times, you know, since then, just kind of calling it a jam session. So at that point, you know, we're like, well, we're growing up, so we just stopped, you know, I guess being the young teenagers we were, playing and all that. And every once in a while I'll play the drums, you know, at home by myself, but I would like to, you know. Of course, Rob's phone goes off. He's so awkward. He's so funny.
Yeah. Sorry.
He's a popular man. You know, we got Knoxville Rob here.
That's right.
I guess you do have your drums set up at home, mm-hmm, with a six-month-old?
Yeah, they're still set up.
Your seven-month-old?
And when he's not started playing yet?
I sat down with him, and I put some drumsticks in his hands, and we started hitting the stuff, you know, just to kind of play around with it. He was, he liked the noise, you know, for sure, but you know, he's 6 months old, so I didn't want to hurt his ears or anything.
Right.
But then, you know, after high school, I went to a technical school. ITT Tech is where I started. Soon realized that was not the path that I wanted to go. So I went into a electrical program at Massey Electric, and I was an apprentice for almost 4 years. I was a third year journeyman, and we learned a lot. I mean, there's a lot of things that I still do today that I learned from that job, and I'm very thankful for learning how to do all of that, because, you know, if not, I would have spent a ton of money to other people with something that I could have done myself. So it's very neat. And then after that, I bought a house in 2007. And flipped it, and then got into, you know, I was like, well, that's where the money's at. And so that's, I decided I wanted to get my license. So in 07, I took the classes, and the classes were It was over there off of Alcoa Highway. I don't know if you're familiar with the real estate school, but that's where it was. And then I didn't actually take my test until 09. And then I took a little refresher course right before that to pass the test. But from 07 to 09, it just wasn't the right timing for me to step out and start. I wish I would have, but I didn't actually get my license until 09. So then here I am.
Nice.
That's awesome.
So it's been, for you two guys, between Hutch and Howard, what is like the craziest story of just, you know, either working with a client in real estate or just like craziest real estate story that you can think of in your combined over 20 years of experience?
There's a ton of different stories that come to mind. Some in particular ones, we really do like getting, you know, going the extra mile whenever it comes to helping our clients. There's been countless times where we've had to step in and take care of some stuff just to make something happen with, you know, the sale of whatever we were working on. Recently, we had to help Carrie. She works for us now. And Carrie's mom, she had to have a French drain on her property. And
this was the day before closing.
Day before. And so we were out there digging with shovels, and I brought some rock from my neighborhood.
he brought like holders. Mountain rock. You know, you're supposed to put that crushed gravel.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, they were like these big rocks, you know.
Well, I mean, you think about it, and the water's just going to go right past it.
Yeah, it's going to keep...
As long as it does the job. Right.
Yeah. But it was... That was an interesting one. we're about to close one where our client passed away about 6 months ago. That's kind of a crazy one.
So
how does that work? You got the client first. I'm guessing it's a listing.
We listed this house.
Okay.
And the lady, I remember she was in bed and she wasn't very
mobile.
Responsive.
Mobile. Yeah. No, she was responsive.
Okay.
And she was
just kind of moved.
She was
back.
Feisty too. She'd argue with you.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
But then I remember the last time, number one, she had all these baseball cards and she was like, hey, you know, can you look up and see how much, because these are like coated in gold or something. And I was like, oh, sure. And when... The last time that I saw her, we had just gotten an offer on her house, and she was like, "Okay, I'm about ready to go," and I took the papers over, and we sat at her table. She wasn't completely bedridden, but she was on one of the oxygen things, mm-hmm. And we sat around her table and drank coffee and talked for probably 45 minutes, just about. Nothing, and then answered her questions about real estate, and then talked about nothing again for another 45 minutes. And it was just really sweet and really good. And we were under contract, and you know, like this weight was off her mind. And then, just like the next day, it was probably a couple of days after that,
right?
But we were like, oh yeah, because we got a cash offer for her. I think it was close to full price. You know, it was very acceptable and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
And
it felt good.
And so that burden mentally was off of her.
Yeah.
And she just passed. So it's gone through all the probate and the court system and all that kind of jazz. And that's the reason that it's dragged on forever.
Gotcha.
But...
Still the same buyer, or did you lose?
Yeah,
that
we have the most tenacious buyer.
Yeah, wow.
Well, she knows it's a good deal.
Wait,
it's
around
in South
for
Knoxville.
6 months.
So. Yeah, well, it's in South Knoxville. It's right near the waterfront, you know, and it's
prime
location.
Yeah,
if you put it, just from the time that we got it under contract, it's probably worth more now.
Wow.
But, you know, that's just.
Just the way the market is, yeah.
Yeah, and the estate just wants to clear the estate. So,
right,
you
of
know,
course,
it's kind of. So
and I've physically mowed, I don't know, 10 or so yards over the years just to make
happy. More presentable.
Yeah.
I've bought refrigerators for people. We've actually helped people move. We did that a few months ago.
Wow.
So we had a seller who would not get out of the house. It wasn't that she wouldn't. It was just, she's like, I don't have any help to move. It's just me. And, well, we had two options, let it go and you know, would never sell. And right. We'd miss out on an opportunity to help someone. And
yeah, that was the seller. We had the buyer.
Yeah.
So us moving her out was...
So you even moved the seller out, which wasn't even your client.
Right.
Wow.
Because the buyer was our client and we cared about him. And, you know, he and his little daughter and, well, his wife and two daughters
right.
were just, you know, they loved this neighborhood and this neighborhood fit exactly what they needed. So it was,
And they were getting a good deal. I mean, mm-hmm. we helped two parties. We helped the seller and we helped the buyer. And hopefully the seller, you know, was appreciative and all that, which... At the time, I don't think she, you know, really was, and that's just part of our business. You know, we do something and people don't really think much of it, but
right.
we spent all weekend. I mean, we spent our time, we gas money, I mean, we really tried to help this lady. And, but anyway, we did the right thing for our client, and it closed, and now everybody's happy, so that's really good. There's all kinds of other little things in, here and there that we've had to do over the years. I've had to replace shingles, and we've had to paint houses, and windows that would not hold open because of an FHA appraiser. So then you have to go over there and try to rig something.
Oh yeah, that's also the reason I carry a pocket knife all the time is so that I can make sure those windows aren't, you know, because yeah, you have to be able to open them.
But I think a lot of all of that stuff. I mean, you take all that experience, you take all the little things that you do, and it makes it all worth it.
Right.
And that's really, you know, why it's fulfilling. Because if we didn't do any of that and we just worked and closed the house and made a commission, and then that wouldn't be very, I don't know. I felt like, you know, growing up, you have to work hard for
right.
money. And I feel like if you just sit back and collect a check, it's not really working hard. You know, you can say you ran around and showed a bunch of houses and all that, and that's, you know, that's a lot of work, but it's not as backbreaking as being the electrician that I was, where
or the baggage handler
crawling right. underneath, you know, little tiny crawl spaces, and you know, we're in the attics and hot, and you know, in the bitter winter, and you have no gloves and all that stuff, and you're out there working and in the elements, and that's pretty rough.
Yeah.
And I at the time we were making $9 an hour, you know,
right.
doing all that, and now I'm making quite a bit more than that. But
yeah, a little bit of a pay raise, right?
Yeah,
$9.75.
Yeah, $9.75. And right. I felt like I need to work hard for, you know, for what I'm doing, and if I can help somebody else by doing, you know, something extra, then that's, you know, we're gonna go the extra mile.
Right.
And that's really what, you know, is what we're about.
Well, and that's what's interesting to me too, about you guys, but then also about real estate as a whole, is for people and clients outside looking in, I feel like most of them would think, oh, you guys are just in the business of, you know, selling houses. But it seems like really you're in the people business first, and then you're just there to help somebody find their home. So it's like the way to think about it as a real estate agent is like really you're in the people business. And then, yeah, you're there to show houses, to help people in homes. But I mean, with how much you guys are helping people, a lot of what you just explained and did isn't necessarily like just for the house. It's to make that family happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you never know what something that you do today, you know, is going to reverberate throughout the years. I literally just closed one of my friends who I met in a networking thing probably in 2007. And whatever, you know, we had all the conversations about everything, but, you know, we'd never worked together. She had never sent anybody else and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then out of the blue, you know, she needed help, and it was nice to be one of the people that, you know, she thought, oh, well, number one, I know he cares. Number two, I know that he knows about this area, you know, about Knoxville. And number three, that he's trustworthy as a professional.
Right.
You know, he's going to answer my questions, and if he doesn't know, he's going to say he doesn't know and find out, you know, and all the things. Of course, after so many years of doing this, you think you know everything, but then every deal you learn that you don't know anything.
Right. You know? Always learning something new.
Yeah, exactly.
It's crazy, you know, like Rob will tell me a story of how he met someone for, whatever, person he's working with at the time. And there was a story about a month ago of him saying that he met a cashier at Walmart for a brief. How long does it take to walk through a cash register? And he gave her his card, and then that was it. And then, 3 years later, she calls him and wants to buy a house.
So, I was like, hey, if you know.
Rob has such an impact on everybody. So
she must have that card magnet on the refrigerator for 30 years.
Yeah, part of that's follow-up, I mean, it's like, I don't know. I sent her a friend request on Facebook. After that, the face and the goofy pictures and the junk that I do on online, I guess some people enjoy that. So
right.
So that's kind of, I think that was the difference in staying in front of her. I didn't actively stay in front of her. That's also how I met Amy, the girlfriend.
Through Facebook.
Well, we opened the original Keller Williams in Farragut, mm-hmm. And we had a grand opening. And I'd met her at she was selling ads for the Sentinel, so I added her as a professional contact on Facebook, and she was friends with a few of my friends. Imagine that.
Right.
And
he's only got almost 5,000 friends on Facebook, yeah.
It's 49.37 or something like that. So feel special if you get invited. No.
I want everybody to go and send Rob a friend request right now. Let's see if he can get to 5,000, tonight. He's probably not gonna pick all of you, but let's just bombard him.
Yeah. I need to get a personal assistant for stuff like that. No, I'm just kidding.
Now needs a personal assistant for Facebook. Love it.
So Rob, your Twitter handler, your Twitter handler is Knoxville Rob, right?
Yes.
Okay, so Knoxville Rob. And then if anybody wants to connect with us on our website, it's hutchandhoward.com.
Yep.
And Josh, how would anybody contact you?
So you can reach me either by, just look up Joshua Maverick Purvis on Facebook, or you can also find us on our website at fmloans.com. And you can also go to my personal website, loansbypurvis.com.
That's awesome. Loans by Purvis. I love that. That's awesome.
You need to do something with Maverick in there.
There we go. Throw a Maverick.
Yeah, Maverick Loans sounds something completely different.
I haven't bought that website yet. I better do that today before this airs. Somebody's going to jump on it and beat me to it.
Well, I think, in regards to this podcast, we're kind of coming to an end. Is there any closing remarks that anybody wants to make?
I guess the big closing remark for me would be is for any of you first-time home buyers out there, or really anybody looking to buy in real estate, first things first, get pre-qualified. You don't want to waste time with looking around. You especially don't want to waste your real estate agent's time. Don't call Brandon and Rob without having a pre-qualification letter in hand, because they have families too. They, have busy schedules, so they're more than happy to show you out on the weekend. I know any real estate agent would be happy to show you out on a weekend, but they're going to want to make sure that, you're pre-qualified and ready to go first before they start showing you, 15 houses. And if you need any help with that, give us a call. And then after you're pre-qualified, we'll get you in touch with Hutch and Howard team and get you into a new house.
And what number is that?
So you can reach us at the office at 865-392-5450 and just ask for one of our loan officers in the office, and we'll be sure to help you out.
Another thing with that, it's not that we want your personal information. As a realtor, as long as Josh or you know, your lender is willing to give you the pre-approval for blank blank. There's so many upsides for you. Number one, you know exactly what house that you can buy. You know what your payments are going to be. You know all the things that lead to us showing you the right houses. And, you know, it takes it from us showing you a whole bunch of houses that don't work, you know, either don't fit your the payments that you want or don't fit the price point that you want to be in, versus, you know, if you come with that pre-approval letter, it's not about not believing you, not trusting you. It's all about us being able to show you, you know, you only have to look at 5 or 10 houses versus, you know, we just show you without end, and then you go get pre-approved and you're like, dang it, I need to have this different price point just so everything works smoother.
And I'll second that. I mean, that's really good too. But in my regard, I mean, like with having the pre-approval letter in this market, if you like a house, more than likely somebody else will too. And if you like it enough to maybe want to put an offer on it, and then you haven't spoke to a lender and gotten that pre-approval letter, it could be the difference in you getting the property over someone else if they made an offer before you did. Because I've seen it a lot of times where, you know, the seller has 4 offers to choose from, and, you know, one of them is, you know, has a pre-approval letter. They're ready to make a decision right then. So they're not having to wait on you to go get qualified. So that can be the difference in you actually winning a bidding war or not. So it's
yeah, and we don't even know what type of, when we were writing up the contract, we have to tell them what kind of loan you're going to get and what type of financing, what amount you're going to put down and all that kind of stuff. And a lot of times those questions aren't answered until you get pre-approved. So it's a win-win for everybody. So call Josh.
And if you want to call us, my number is 865-216-2009. And Rob?
865-385-9070. Yeah.
Well, we thank everybody for their time today and taking it, you know, crack at listening to us, you know, jab for the past 45 minutes. But we really do appreciate everybody, and we're going to do more of these.
All right. Look forward to talking to you guys next time. See you soon. All
right. If you have any interest in, you know, we'd love input, we'd love feedback, anything like that, you can email us at Hutch and Howard, or you can text us at either of those numbers. And, I'm sure you can call Josh or email Josh.
You can find me.
Yeah, just Josh Maverick Purvis. Thanks and have a great day.
Thanks.
If you're buying or selling your home, trust a professional, don't do it alone. From the sunflower fields to the SunSphere Tower, there's a knowledgeable name. It's Hutch and Howard. It's Hutch and Howard.